figured today we're just going to talk about dystopian novels.
About what?
Dystopian novels, you know.
Are you reading a dystopian novel?
No. But I was just having a conversation about them with somebody. So that's what's on my mind.
I want to talk about the 1971-8.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about your comment on the story about the new plant that's going to be locating, the aluminum plant that's going to be locating in Eastern Kentucky.
That's a little political.
Well, I don't mean it from like a political standpoint, but I wanted to better understand your comment about that. Because you've always understood all that stuff much more than I have.
Well, we can jump right into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to me, so when you listen to Bevin and you listen to the governor of Kansas and you listen to Trump talk, what they're talking about essentially with all these changes to regulations and taxes and everything is that, hey, you know, for too long we've been holding businesses down. And yeah. That's affected the middle class, right? Like, the middle class isn't getting the pay raises they need and things like that because, you know, of all these rules. And so, obviously, he went out and found a guy, Bevin did, who was happy to stand in front of an audience and tell everybody that, well, he only recently came to Kentucky was because of the right to work law.
Right to work. Yeah.
And I think the part that's disturbing to me is when he uses language where he's saying things like, you know, it's great to be in a situation where we can just throw work rules out the window.
Right.
Right. Well, you know, work rules are there to actually protect the workers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and let's be honest, there's a reason why work rules were put in place. It's because employers have been known to take advantage of their workers. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I just find it disturbing that, especially when he talks about, you know, they're going to pay an average salary of $70,000 and it's 550 jobs. And then he's talking about $1.5 billion in revenue out of that facility. Then so 3% of your money is going to salary. Yeah. Obviously, there's other costs, there's insurance and things like that. But still, you're going to be well below 10% of your revenues going toward your employees. And you're worried about work rules? Really?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy to me.
Well, do you have any idea? So that's the percentage is what I wanted to get at. I mean, is that – I mean, I am really ignorant about – I mean, my little business, it's just me. And so, you know, for my little business – and also I don't produce anything. I'm just a service person. So for me, it's like almost – you know, it's almost 100%.
You know, and Eric, I don't know the modern way of looking at this. I know that when Dad was running a small business, you know, he used to tell me that the basic idea behind a small business was you never wanted to go above 80% toward labor cost, right?
Long way from 3%.
Right. So, you know, 3%, 10%, like, that's such a low margin on your costs. Like, the idea that you're going to be holding back on somebody because of work rule related stuff is crazy to me. I don't get that at all. It makes no sense. I mean, it's putting your labor force at such a disadvantage, and you're and essentially the government's supporting it and saying, yeah, that's fine. We don't care about our workers. You know, all we care about is you making $1.5 billion, you know. Yeah. Now, granted, look, it's 550 jobs, and they're paying $70,000 average salary. That's great. That's a lot of jobs, and that's important, and places need that. I'm not saying that that's not important, but it's just that attitude that for some reason it's – work safety and how we treat our employees and all that stuff is so unimportant. It's disturbing to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
And that the return, I guess the thing that gets me, and you know, I mean, again, it's not real. This is without judgment. I mean, I'm just what gets me is that the return apparently has to be so terrific to be willing to invest in that. You know, like I had heard for, you know, the great Apple's the company that everybody talks about how much money the enterprises are sitting on.
Right.
And that, you know, to try, what do we have to do to get the enterprises to spend money? I don't know. That's the thing that I thought is, wow, the return. When you said that about the 3%, I was, that's the thing that gets me. And I really don't know what I'm talking about. But is it?
Well, I do think Eric points, now where it does point to is it does point to this idea of unfair competition, right? I mean, if you can go and build the same plant in Mexico or China and you can get 1% labor cost,
right?
Then yeah, it starts to make sense, you know, why these margins are so low. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, it's kind of disturbing to me, I guess, but.
Ah, man. Well, I thought that was really interesting. And it really occurs to me too, that, I mean, not that this is any big deal, but I was thinking about, you know, I've just done a bit of business reporting for newspapers and stuff like that, and how little, you know, how unqualified I was to do that, and just to know the right questions to ask and to think about that. But there's probably people out there doing good analysis of that.
I'm sure. Yeah, I would imagine that's what economists are looking at all the time, right?
Well, I'm certain of that. I mean, there's definitely people like sort of inside the investment community and
sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're right about that.
As far
that.
As like general population type reporting. Anyway, I thought you brought up a really good question. That whole story was, and again, I don't know a whole bunch of details about it, but that was a huge splash. They had it at this place. It's called the McConnell House.
Yeah.
Which the whole scene was kind of odd, and but a huge, you know, it's a huge number of jobs, a terrific salary, you know, for most people, those are terrific salaries.
Sure.
And particularly,
well, that's the average. Now, we don't know what that means.
Yeah,
the average.
That's absolutely true.
You know, they could have a president of operations there that's going to make $400,000 a year, and the average worker's going to make 30. I mean, who knows? So it's hard to know how the average works out, but yeah. So
Governor Bevin got all upset at the Courier Journal. He like railed on the Courier Journal. Apparently, he had said that the CJ did no coverage of the announcement. Apparently, that turned out to not be true. But anyway, he went on kind of a tweet rampage over the weekend.
Sure, I could see that. Well, it's obvious he wanted this. I mean,
oh yeah.
Look, you don't pick this guy to stand in front of people and say, I would not have come here if not for,
right.
Unless you wanted to make a big deal out of it. And, you know, I don't know.
It's, yeah, the talking points were absolutely all I mean, they would have had to have been coordinated. And, I mean, right. That's really my stock in trade now, is kind of coordinating all those types of messages. I don't think that's necessarily just disingenuous, if that's true.
No, it is what it is. I mean,
what it is. It's just getting the language straight. But,
I think it's interesting you compare that to Volvo's response when Bevin used their name and saying essentially the same thing, and they immediately came out and said, we never said that.
So, well, that's a good way to I mean, it doesn't make any difference what you say. I mean, if you mess up and name a company of any size without their approval. I mean, even if they agree with what you say, I mean,
right.
You get dinged for that because they gotta, you know, that's brand management and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I don't know.
So I got a question for you.
Okay.
How does a team that has no starter that hits over 280
mm-hmm.
win over 100 games in baseball?
What are you gonna? What is this? The 71 A's?
Yes. Did you look at their stats? Did you look
at
that team?
No, season. No, I'm not that far along.
See, I never realized that team won that many games.
Yeah.
They won 101 games.
That's a great team. I mean, and that is going to be, you know, they are putting together the core of guys that are going to win the World Series, you know, three straight years.
Sure, yeah, you got Dick Green at second already, you got Campanaris, you got Bando. So you've got those three in place. You've got Rudy in left and Jackson in right. I forget who their center fielder will end up being. They've got Monday on the 71 team. And then I think, doesn't Monday move over to first in 72? Isn't he on the 72 team?
No. Okay. So
Is
what
he gone
happens?
by 72?
Yeah. So Monday becomes, what's going to happen is they're going to get swept by the Orioles
Right,
in the
right,
playoffs. And the thought is they need more pitching depth. And so they trade Monday
They
for
get
Ken
Ken
Holt.
Holtzman.
They get Ken Holtzman. And that like solidify, he's the veteran who solidifies this pitching rotation. And but yeah, so anyway, Monday was the it's incredible. The A's like really this has probably all been written about. I just never until you said that, I hadn't really thought about it that hard. But my guess is that the A's are considered to be the first ones to like figure out the Major League Baseball draft because their first round picks in the early going are like Rick Monday. Reggie Jackson, like Rick Monday was the first ever first round baseball draft pick in 1965. That was the
Oh,
first
okay.
draft. And then Reggie Jackson's their next one. And then a few years later, they draft George Hendrick, although he didn't play too long for them. But that first draft, that 65 draft, they also got Sal Bando. And who else? They got Gene Tennis in the later rounds. And they got anyway, they got a number of other guys who did who had careers with other teams, a catcher named Bob Stinson, and anyway, some different ones like that. But they were like, they were apparently identifying this talent.
Well, it's funny because Dad and I were just talking about this team this morning on the phone. And the thing he was saying is that the thing he remembers about them was that you had literally never heard of any of these guys until suddenly they were there. And then, so he knew they were all built in house. And, that's, I don't know. It's an interesting team. I mean, well, it's funny too. You talk about that with Holtzman in the 72 season, and I assume Vida Blue must have been hurt in 72 because he didn't play that much. He had had like 24 wins, I think, in 71, and
Yeah,
then really,
he's the hottest pitcher here at the start of the
right.
one season. Six and one right now.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to me that the kind of team, like I think today in today's baseball, if you told me you were going to have a team that the batting average would be that low across the board, I think people would think we can't win that way. And I
Well,
don't know what's changed. I mean, what was different about that team? Why were they able to, I don't know, but
yeah. Well, and they were a so this is going to lead to your guy Gene Tennis too because so they're going to trade Monday for Holtzman, and now they feel like their batting order is weak in the middle, and so they had their catcher at the time was thought to be like the best young catcher in the American League, this guy named Dave Duncan.
Right, Dave Duncan, yeah.
And then they end up favoring Duncan's kind of critical of Charlie Finley, and maybe that caused some fallout and that sort of thing. But they're going to turn to Tennis because he was a bigger hitter, and of course, then he becomes a big postseason star. And what was weird then, Duncan becomes like the pitching coach on the La Russa teams later.
Well, of course, who else is on this team in 1971 at 26 years old?
Who?
Tony La Russa.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he is. He's on the bench of those teams. So yeah, it's kind of interesting, but they
That's weird. I wonder if he and Duncan became friends then.
yeah, I guess they did.
They were around the same age. Duncan's 25 in 1971, La Russa's 26.
They had started out
So.
they started out really poorly. They lost their oh, they were shut out in their opener, and they were anyway, I think they started out like 2-5 or 2-6 or something like that in 1971. And And Dick Williams had been hired as the manager. He was in his career. And Williams had, you know, been a really good manager in Boston and sort of just tightened down on him. And anyway, I thought, you know, he was manager then into the World Series seasons. And I wonder about a guy. There was a guy that was a coach like throughout their minor league system up until his last season was 1971, but a guy named Gus Niaros, and he had coached all these guys at different points along their minor league system. But it sounds like they were just really, you know, you kind of think of, cause all these guys become these free agent, flamboyant, signees, first giant contract guys. But the deal is that they were all homegrown and they were all probably, you know, very, very fundamentally sound and actually fit together as a team, you know, and then they all got giant paydays as rewards for that. But they were really quite a well.
It's the Royals from a few years ago, right? I mean, you think about the Royals from a few years ago. They built that team up from the draft and their minor league system. You know, when they made it to that World Series, the first World Series. That year, I remember at the beginning of the year, everybody was saying, well, it looks like this Royals experiment's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are kind of hitting that age where they're going to start hitting free agency. And if they're not going to win, you know, they're going to have to break this team up and try to restart. And, you know, and then they got those two years out of them and now they're all gone, essentially. You know, they.
Right. They all made money.
I mean, it's, but they all grew up together, kind of like you're talking about. I mean, they all came in together, they all grew up together.
Yeah.
In the system.
Well, and that's one thing, like these guys had already the Sports Illustrated baseball preview of that season had, I think, the A's third, and they had felt like that they had already peaked, you know, that they had
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that Jackson, you know, that Reggie Jackson was this kind of undisciplined. You know, he'd had a really strong.
Well, his 69 season's amazing.
Really strong season in 69, and then they regressed. And he starts out, like, with this huge number of strikeouts within his first several, you know, dozens of at-bats in 71. And this thought
well,
that,
his,
you know,
strikeout numbers are insane. Yeah,
they are. That he's this kind of, like, you know, incorrigibly undisciplined hitter, and that – that Jim Hunter is not getting any better and, you know, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And it just, you know, it just happened when it happened. I mean, it just took a while for it to all click in together. But sports writers can, you know, you can never see that, you know, like if you don't, you know is what has actually happened. I mean, you're not able to foresee it, you know, you can't.
Well, it's funny to me because you look, when you start looking forward in time, and you get to 73, which is the last year with Dick Williams, and it's, you know, Holtzman and Blue and Hunter all win over 20 games. That's an insane team. I mean, that team is like at the peak of what they're ever going to be. You know, it's and then, you know, but I don't know. I was looking at this yesterday. Like, I'd forgotten about the fact that they made it to the playoffs in 75.
Yeah, they made it one more year. Yeah. That was, of course, you know, that's, of course, the first season I can actually remember watching was 75. the right before the collapse.
I remember, you know, it's funny because I remember them playing the Dodgers because Steven was such a big Dodgers fan.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah.
So that's the only reason I remember that, to be honest with you. You know, the other thing, too, I hadn't thought about until I was looking at this was 73 is when the DH comes in.
Right.
And I don't know. That's its own weird, interesting thing.
Well, there you go. See, I hadn't thought about this. I read this morning that one of the things that made Vida Blue so valuable in the early going was that he was a switch hitter. He was the rare switch hitting pitcher. And so.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And he was quite a good hitter in the early part of his career. And so, you know, that set up all kinds of things where you might leave him in longer late in games if he was still pitching effectively and you're trailing, you know, or if you're trying to preserve a lead or something like that, because, you know, you could still flop him around to the other side. You wouldn't necessarily pinch hit for him in all the instances that what you would. Of course, that all goes out the window by 70, you know, by 73.
Right. You know what's funny? When you think about Catfish Hunter, do you – how many years do you think of him being really good with the Yankees?
Oh, like two.
See, I was thinking he was there longer. I didn't realize he burned out so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, he was – you know, he'd already had quite a career.
Well, he had five straight 20-21 seasons.
Are those all with Oakland or is now –
He wins 23 games with New York in 75.
Okay, so that's the last of those. Yeah, and he's kind of like he doesn't go anywhere after New York, does he?
No, he stays in New York till the end of his career. Yeah.
He died a few years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking about It's funny looking at this stuff from the 70s and just thinking about, like, what you remember and how you remember it, you know, and seeing the actual numbers. And it's like, oh, yeah. I remember people saying Jackson struck out a lot, and he really did. He really did strike out a lot.
He was great. He was also just a great player. My gosh. He was fantastic in those World Series.
Yeah, what an odd guy. You know?
Yeah, what an odd guy. And he is kind of like, you know, the whole like stupid arguments about, well, it's not a, you know, it's not a hall of competence, or it's not a hall, you know, it is a hall of fame and all that kind of stuff. He really is kind of the numbers, the career numbers. You could kind of have some
he's a 262 hitter.
Yeah, but you've got, I mean, there's no question. I mean, if you were watching baseball from like 1970 to 1985, I mean, my gosh, there's no question Reggie Jackson's a Hall of Famer. I mean, anyway, right. If you want to define that, it's just...
He won five World Series, Eric.
Yeah, that's astounding.
He won five World Series. And if New York had had him in 1976, I'd forgotten that he did a year in Baltimore.
That's right. He did that year.
If they had had him for 1976, maybe they would have won that World Series. Who knows? But, I mean, it's crazy to me to think that he... I was talking to Dad about that today, and I said, you know, the idea that he won five World Series, it completely slipped my mind. Like, I don't know, just didn't even think about it.
He was a player. He was on, I guess he wasn't old enough to play in that World Series, but he and Sal Bando and Rick Monday were all at Arizona State at the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, their manager down there, Bobby Winkles, is one of the ones who then manages the A's after after Williams. I don't think he's the immediate. Maybe he was. Maybe he's the one who took over after Williams. He's either after Dick Williams and before Alvin Dark, or vice versa. But at the end of that, like, A's dynasty, he's part of that. Yeah, Arizona State team. Well. Anyway, yeah, it's fun. So, yeah, like right now I'm going the day by day to the – that's the baseball season's the best for this, you know, because it's
– Well, yeah, because you can see it play out. Yeah,
every day. So, the Orioles are great, and the National – of course, mostly I read about the National League East because I follow it in the archives of the Chicago Tribune. And the Cubs are just off to such a horrible start, and they've like totally turned on them now. You know, they've been a team of such promise,
right?
A couple seasons. Now they've started out so poorly, and the Chicago Tribune's just had enough. I mean, they like totally played up the start of their season. The Chicago Tribune was a great newspaper at that time. It must have been so much fun to get that if you lived in Chicago. And but they're just so crestfallen, and
That's fine.
And then the Bullets lost. The Bullets lost the championship series last night.
Yeah, swept out.
I
was reading your thing, yeah.
They weren't even close. The Bucks were just, they just clobbered them. So. It's so much fun. Watching the NBA clips from that time, you know, there's so much more air on the court because the guys weren't as they're not as big, they're not as broad, you know.
Right.
It's officiated differently and all that kind of stuff.
Different game.
It is a totally different game. Like half the time, like Oscar Robertson is just like walking around the court with the ball, you know, like walking around dribbling the ball, and you know, everybody else is kind of like running around crazily, but he's like totally in control of the whole situation. It wasn't even a close series. He was fantastic.
So are you saying he may have been a little better than Russell Westbrook, or?
Wizards bounce back tonight.
They're playing tonight, right?
Now because of the Kornheiser radio show, you know, I'm like totally dialed into these teams. So I actually watched the Capitals all last night.
Did they end up winning that game? Yeah. I never saw the final. Okay.
Oh. I can't tell you how mad I was for having gotten sucked into that game because they're up 2-0 and then they give up 2 empty net goals in the last 3 minutes to send it to an extra period. And, you know, it's 9:15 at my time, 10 o'clock, something like right. that. And of course I got to get to bed. And I was just like, why did I do this? I was so mad at myself. Of course, then I watched it to the end. It didn't take them long to win it in the extra period, but, oh.
They're the worst, man. They cannot close out a game, it seems like.
But. Yeah. I'm interested to hear the show today, what they had to say about it.
Well, I assume they're going to talk about Crosby getting knocked out. And one of the things that Kornheiser, they talked about this on PTI a while back, was he was talking about a guy like Crosby, you know, shouldn't he be a protected player?
Yeah.
But, you know, Crosby had a deal. I don't know about this game, but I know he had a situation earlier in the season where he was sort of cheap-shotting some people. And I do know from being an Eric Lindros, from following Eric Lindros when I was living in Philadelphia, that the attitude of hockey players is it's okay if you're the protected player. They will respect that. They'll respect that, and they won't touch you.
Uh-huh.
But if you cheap shot people, you're no longer the protected player.
So what is the deal with the protected player?
So if you're the protected player, like Gretzky was the protected player when he played hockey, it essentially means like you're not going to hurt him. You're not going to go out of your way to try to kill him against the boards. You're not going to get overly physical, right? You're not going to knock him out, essentially. Yeah. And Lindros was that for the Flyers. But what Lindros would do is he would constantly cheap shot other players.
Oh.
You know, and at some point the other team said, yeah, enough is enough. You know, right. We're not going to. And that's essentially what ended his career. I mean, people hated him so much for that stuff that they targeted, you know, then they started targeting him.
So is this like, this has got to be some kind of like unofficial deal where it's just.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, this is like a totally unofficial thing.
This is like, there's a Seinfeld episode about this, but it's about the tennis pro. Do you remember this one?
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah, there's tennis pro and it's like he gets Jerry to spend like this inordinate amount of money on a tennis racket. And then it turns out that the tennis pro is like a really horrible tennis player.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah.
Jerry's all mad at him. But then he's got to like to prove his manhood to his girlfriend. Yeah, he's got to, you know, he gets Jerry to agree.
To I remember this, yeah.
But then he trash talks the whole time, and then Jerry gets mad, and so then he just clobbers him.
Right.
Yeah. So that's
yeah. If you're gonna if you're gonna do that,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. Same idea.
That's hysterical.
Same idea.
Yeah.
But that makes sense to me, right? I mean, you sort of get it.
Your hockey knowledge, it sneaks up on me. I always forget.
I was really into it when I was living in Philadelphia.
The hockey world.
I watched it like every night on TV when it was on. And even played that computer game, which was a great way to learn hockey.
Oh, that's a great way to learn. Any sport.
But yeah, it was. And those were fun teams. Lindros was amazing. My gosh. Yeah. He was incredible. But. He's a weird story. I'm surprised they don't do a 30 for 30 about him.
Yeah, it's true. I'm sure they will someday.
He would be a good one. I mean, he had that. He had everything going for him. He was this amazing talent. He came in very young. He was very. He lived up to all the expectations of his abilities. He had a parent who was like overly involved in his life.
Yeah.
Who was constantly getting into arguments, public arguments with the GM of the Flyers. And, you know, eventually that's what, I mean, that was, that's why they got rid of, I mean, there were so many problems around him and all that stuff. It was just weird. It was, that was a weird situation, but.
He was huge too. He was a huge man.
Oh man, he was massive.
That's what I remember. I mean, not being a hockey fan, but I remember seeing, you know, here he was. This is like 18 or 19 years old, or however old he was.
Yeah, he was mad. He was like bigger than anybody else in the NHL.
He's a giant.
it's like if you ever seen those clips of Brett Favre in college.
Yeah.
It literally looks like a man playing with like high school kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy how huge Brett Favre was in like how big he was in college.
Oh man! You should get back into hockey. You know, Popeye Jones.
I know. That's so cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
That's so cool. I remember following him a few years ago, reading about that. I think that's really cool. Yeah, sports are fun. Dad and I were talking about those A's teams this morning, and you know his thing, Catfish Hunter. So Dad, if you were to rank Dad's favorite pitchers of all time, at least from what I hear him talking about, it would be Whitey Ford number one, of course, because he grew up a huge Yankees fan during that period, and Catfish Hunter number two. He loved that 70s A's team is probably his second favorite team of all time to the Yankees. He loved those 70s A's teams.
Well, that's one of the reasons
why they stuck with us. I mean, Dad, if they were on TV, Dad was watching them.
Yeah.
You know, he loved those guys. And so, yeah, that definitely has an effect when you're a kid. When your dad's like, yeah, these guys are great, you know. So, but yeah, he was a huge Catfish Hunter fan. And he was just talking about that again today, how much he loved Catfish Hunter. But here's a question for you, and you might actually know the answer to this. Has anybody ever done like a book, do you know of, about Casey Stengel? Is there any kind of
I think there'd have to be, but I don't know.
Thing out there about him, or have you ever seen any good shows about him? Or
I know nothing about him. I know zero about him. But I am sure it exists, but I of course don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder.
You know, to me, he's sort of a, because he was wasn't he the first Mets manager, like when they were really bad? And
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And I think he was kind of a, you know, sort of like, by that point, he was kind of a comedic figure, kind of making fun about how bad the Mets were. But so I don't really have a sense of him as a great manager. You know, to me, he's kind of that's what I think about.
Well, and I think the thing about him, yeah, he managed the Mets from 62 to 65. yeah, I think what's weird to me about him is he did some very odd baseball things, right? Like, do you know about him and Whitey Ford?
No.
So he didn't pitch Whitey Ford that much. I don't know how else to put it. Like, you know, you think of a starter today, your primary starter, you know, you think of them getting what a ton of innings and all that stuff. And Ford famously, I guess as he got a little older, especially, he kind of cut way back on his pitching. And I think Stephen was telling me Bill James heard about this, but he, you know, he essentially started pitching him only against really good teams.
Oh.
Right. So he would only pitch him, say, Dad was saying like he can always remember when they would play Cleveland, and Cleveland at that time, you know, had Bob Feller and who else? Two other great pitchers. Whitey Ford always pitched the first game against Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah, he would sort of purposely pick his spots to pitch Whitey Ford. Is kind of the the way it's thought about. And that's very odd, right?
That is
odd. Who does that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there'd be this thought now that, like, you know, that he has to pitch on a rotation, you know, that you've got to.
So 1960 was Casey Stengel's last year with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Whitey Ford started 29 games that year. The next year, they got rid of Stengel after 60. The next year, Whitey Ford started 39 games.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of odd. I mean,
that is really crazy.
Yeah.
Huh. No, my word, I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting guy. I mean, I don't know. He's well, Dad was saying he always thought, you know, when he used to read about Stengel, because Dad was a prolific, like, he would read all the baseball rags at the time, like all those, you know, the Baseball Digest and all that stuff that would come out every year. And he was saying that the thing he remembered them writing a lot about Stengel at the time was the fact that, you know, Stengel was using relief pitchers in a way that nobody had ever used them before. You know, that he was consistently going to relief pitchers in late innings, and nobody had ever done that before.
Huh.
So I don't know. He's just kind of an interesting figure in that way. And I don't know if anybody's ever written about that stuff of his, like him as a baseball person, you know.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to know.
I think the thing to look for would be like the when Bill James was doing the almanac, that would be the thing to do, is to go find the Casey Stengel, whatever he's written about
him. He did write a book about managers, right? Didn't James do a whole book about managers?
I don't know. Maybe it should make sense. I don't know that he did.
I think I read that book and I've already forgotten about it.
Of course,
but... yeah. Anyhow, I thought that was interesting.
Baseball. I know so little. I mean, there's just...
I don't know anything anymore. I've forgotten everything.
There's so much to know, you know, and it's been so heavily documented that, you know, you can go a million different directions. And I don't know. I just never – the one thing I never liked watching, and as much as I liked watching football and basketball, though I like reading it and kind of following it more than I like watching.
When I was a kid, baseball was definitely my favorite sport to watch.
Yeah.
I loved watching baseball, but I'd have a hard time now sitting through a game, I think.
Yeah.
I can watch basketball now.
Yeah.
I can sit through a basketball game now pretty easily, but
yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know what's changed. Yeah. You know, if I were going to go to a sporting event, though, I'd rather go to a baseball game than anything else.
Yeah, me too.
You know. The idea of going to a football game has no appeal.
Yeah, that was a bad. That we did that Dolphins game in Baltimore.
Yeah, that was awful.
Who?
That was a fun day.
Who won it?
I have no idea.
No, either. I think the Dolphins actually did win it.
I had no idea. What year was that? 80, 98?
Yeah, about then. Maybe a little bit. So. Yeah. All right. So, how are you guys doing?
Nah, we're doing okay. Mabel's got a ear infection, but other than that, we're doing good. How about you guys?
Doing fine. Virginia just taught me the other night about she gets. We do a peroxide mix in her ears, and she taught that to me. And man, I love that thing. Feels so good.
You're funny.
Yeah. All right, well, Rachel's home for lunch, so I'm going to let you go.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Oh, you got a message about the MIDI.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but yeah.
Song.
Oh, that's right. If I can find that MIDI.
You know, I sing that thing all the time in my head.
Really?
Yes.
Did you? You didn't have the album, did you? Okay.
No, but you and Rusty both did, so.
Yeah. Of course.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you soon. Yeah.